Well, hey everybody, it's Chuck. Welcome back. I had a couple things I wanted to chat about today, and maybe a little bit to do it in a podcast format. So I figured I'd just put a little route in here. And here I am again on the side of the road with object and path detected, takeover to proceed. There's a setting in here, I believe. Let me see. See this obstacle aware acceleration? I think, what does that say? Obstacle aware acceleration limits acceleration, apply brakes if any obstacles detected. I'm going to turn that off. And let me see what happens if I put it back into park. And now let me go double check that my autopilot has obstacle aware acceleration off. And if I long press this, will it start now? So see that, it still says object and path detected. And if you look here on the cameras, I'm on the curb right here. See this back left? I'm right on the curb. I'm not anywhere. So if I tap the accelerator, it's gonna go. That's what I wanted to show you. Although, what is it thinks in the road now? Oh, there's a manhole cover right there. That's a manhole cover. You're gonna run over the manhole now. Okay, I guess you, wow, that was not the start I wanted for this little chit chat. Any case, today's the day after earnings. You know, we had our earnings call with Tesla yesterday. This is not a stock channel and I don't give stock advice. So that's not what, I don't want to start with that. But there were a lot of things said yesterday about FSD and the future of Tesla's ambitions with autonomy. And Optimus and a whole bunch of other things. So I just figured I'd throw a route in here, kind of drive around the neighborhood in areas where I live. It's a pretty nice drive. It's a nice morning here at 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning. And I wanted to talk about the earnings call and the things were said. And also as a pilot, my heart goes out to the family and friends of the crew members of the Black Hawk helicopter and the 64 crew and passengers on board the PSA flight that was in a midair collision at 8:48 last night, Wednesday night. A tragic accident. My heart goes out to you. And as a pilot, I know how that can happen. I can see through it. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about that at the end, just from my pilot's perspective on how it might happen and to speculate before the investigation happens a little bit. Obviously, the investigation takes precedence. But let's go back to the earnings call first because, you know, basically the big news is they are going forward full steam ahead with unsupervised. Elon was very, very bullish talking about FSD unsupervised V13. And for the first time, we heard the words V14 mentioned, which is exciting. Didn't give any timelines. We don't know what V14 means or what it'll include. But more than likely, V14, at least in their mind, is going to be some sort of unsupervised version, is my guess. It's going to be the first one that they're ready to throttle back and let it go unsupervised. But I think the big news was they put a stake in the sand. If that means, if that you understand what I meant by that, on June 2025 in Austin, Texas, there are going to be unsupervised Teslas driving for paid fare. So there's going to be a robo-taxi service in Austin in June of 2025. Now, granted, let's take that June of 2025 just like a SpaceX launch, right? You know, we're going to launch no earlier than. I think June of 2025 could be very easily taken as an NET for unsupervised paid service in Austin. It's not going to come sooner, but it might come later because there are things unknown still to be solved there. And no matter what I think about unsupervised happening on this hardware with its current configuration and all of that, I love this strategy of putting a stake in the ground and say, we're never gonna get there if we don't start somewhere. And that's my biggest takeaway from this entire video. I'm really, really happy. They've got a location, they've got a municipality, they've got a plan to do something. Because we can machinate all we want on this FSD, and I can go find little nitinoid things until the end of time of why it they're going to have to solve that, or they're going to have to solve that, or they're going to have to solve that. But if all we ever do is work on those little nitinoid things and we don't ever launch something, we're really not focusing on the bigger issues of launching. good object here, nice little gap. The Model Y just drives so smoothly sometimes. It's just amazing. So that is what I heard when I said June of 2025. I'm like, yes, it's going to launch. Now, it can stay in Austin for 3 years. We don't know. I don't think that's going to be the case. But I'm going to go back to the SpaceX analogy and say, listen, sometimes you've just got to go with what you've got so that you get the data and learn from the true pain points. Because right now, we're not solving any pain points that have anything to do with a customer. We're not solving any pain points that have anything to do with a payment system. We're not solving any pain points that have anything to do with precision pickup and drop off. All of those things we're not even working on yet. And until they deploy something, and now granted, on the last earnings call, they did say they had something going on in California, so we speculated on that. But he didn't mention this is starting in California in June, so this is a Texas thing in June of 2025. So I really am excited for this because we're still going to be doing what we're doing over here with all of the testing and the new versions and all of these major functions. But to get a service launching so they can start collecting data on whether or not it works or not, is it precise enough? And can the car in its pristine state, and I'll say it that way, be a functional robotaxi? And in Austin, where they've got to have the engineers and they're going to have people wiping cameras and they're going to make sure they do it on good weather days probably to start, and all of these things they can control. But at least they can go from point A to point B, collect your $5, and then try it again in a Model 3 or a Model Y running AI 4 with hopefully a version 14 software. That is an achievable goal, in my opinion, in a controlled operational domain. And that's what I've said this entire time. They can do this as long as they control it. This morning, I went on a drive in the Cybertruck, and the windshield's kind of dirty from all of the soap I'm putting on with the wrap I'm doing. And the sun was low. And the very first thing was a big old wipe that just smeared the entire windscreen. But guess when that wipe happened? That wipe happened after doing my unprotected left-hand turn and going straight into the sun on a 50-mile-an-hour road. And as soon as that wipe happened, I got the critical hands takeover immediately. And before I got my hands on the steering wheel, it was already veering into the lane adjacent. Not navigating to slow down. It had basically said, you got to take over. So we can't have a robotaxi that gives up in the middle of a highway. We have to have some sort of camera occlusion, slow down and pull over plan. That's not what it was doing. So this is the sort of thing I'm talking about when I say there's going to be always something to work on. And when we work on it, we can focus on those issues. And maybe that is the better way to deploy this in a SpaceX Starship kind of a launch it, break it, fix it, launch it again kind of a plan. I just want to pull up here. We're at the Temecquana Country Club here in Jacksonville. This is a famous old country club, mostly golf. It's on the river. It's beautiful. But I figured I would just kind of drive you guys here and show you what it looked like. And I'm going to add that. And I'm going to hit done. I don't know where it's going on this endpoint. It looks like it's navigating down this road a little bit. Pay attention to the road, Chuck. Is it going to pull into this parking lot? Yeah, it's going to pull in this parking lot. This is good. I can delete the waypoint. I'm going to leave the waypoint there because it's got, okay, it's going to fish around because the roads don't go. This is the precision park and unpark that we need to fix, right? So I'm going to go ahead and delete the Temecquana Country Club from it. It's going to get a new route, and now it's going to say, let me find my way out of here. If you notice, that point of interest was nowhere near a parking lot, right? So it was just going to navigate around until it found something, and it probably would have stopped somewhere and just pulled over. But now that I've given it the next point, it should just jump on the road and get on out of here. Let's see how this works. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say about the robotaxi. Whether you, let's see, it's decided to stop here. I've definitely got a route in there that has nothing to do with stopping here anymore. Okay, and there we go. That's, I don't know why it paused there. It was, maybe it was getting its thoughts together. Possum, keep thinking. And now we're just going to jump back out on the road, no problem. Do you have a narrow road here with an oncoming car? Is it going to wait for this car? It probably should. Did I leave enough room for this car to pull in? He's going around, so maybe not. I see how narrow this road was. If it had pulled out, it could have been a little bit tight because there's a little bit of a raised stone curb there where you can't really pull onto the grass. FSD this is a great strategy. And there was another kind of a big event that happened on the earnings call, and it was about Hardware 3. And it was due to one of the say.com questions that the shareholders got to ask, and it was about the Hardware 3 retrofit. And the initial question was passed to Ashok, and much like a VP should, and I'm not blaming Ashok for this. I've seen some comments where people did not like Ashok's point of view. But let me tell you what, Ashok was saying what they're working on. He's not the guy to say we're done. He's the guy to say we're working on it. It's a what they called it, a baby V13 or something like that. And this is good. Okay, so we got parked cars on the right for some sort of estate sale. We got oncoming cars that had to go into the grass. See how these cars are having to go into the grass? I can't go anywhere because the parked car's on the right. So they're going around, and now I need to assert myself. So that was exactly right. The only other thing I could have done would be park in one of these spots to let them go by. But because they had the grass and kept moving, it played out. So Ashok basically started kind of giving the company line of, we're working on it. We haven't given up yet. You're going to distill the model down. We're going to get as much out of it. And Elon very quickly, for the first time, interjected and said, let's be honest here. We're probably going to have to update Hardware 3, and it's going to be difficult, and I think he even said painful. So it is as clear as day, and he did say for those that purchased FSD. So if you subscribed, he wasn't talking to you. If you bought FSD, he is talking to you. And honestly, this makes me think about my situation where my 2020 Model Y, where I purchased FSD outright, and it is on my vehicle that my son, Charlie, bought. So he has FSD that was included with the car. Does he get an upgrade when it comes on a car that he purchased from me? And for any used car owner that has a car with Hardware 3 and FSD, do you think the language they're using is going to give you an upgrade on that car? I would think the answer has to be yes, if it's included on the car and you bought it, because theoretically you also bought the value of that FSD when you purchased the car. But that's another interesting debate. I would love to hear some of you think about. Do you think the language they're using would extend to someone that purchased a vehicle? All right, we've got a construction truck here, a contractor that looks like he's kind of tapping brakes, can't figure out what he wants to do. He's probably got a park to work on one of these houses here. And we're having to use this blind one-way access point on this road just to get around these trucks. He's kind of our lead car here, so we didn't have to take the blind to see how he's very, very, very interesting dynamic there, where that a wheelbarrow was coming around and I was going around and it didn't overreact at all. It navigated through. We got an open door here on this van. Is it rendered as open? It's not, is it? It honored it, but wasn't rendered as open on that. Okay, switching back to the Hardware 3 comment from Elon, he basically was just calling a spade, even though Ashok was kind of giving the company line, which they had obviously been talking about this over the last months, right? I mean, at some point, Elon is using his own projection of where the technology is going, like he talked about earlier in the call with LiDAR, to that ridiculous question from Adam Jonas about, you know, Elon, do you still think LiDAR is a joke? And I agree with Rob Mauer and everyone else that has said that is a ridiculous question. Give up on that one, right? He's made his point, and he's not going to change his mind, even if he ever does put LiDAR on the car. He's not going to change it, and I don't think he's going to put LiDAR on the car. So anyway, I think that it was a commitment, and Ashok did the right thing, but Elon very quickly interjected and said, that's not the message we want to put out. He's obviously feeling the pain. He's feeling the complaints. And the Hardware 3 folks out there that are waiting on these builds, they very clearly said, keep waiting, because he said that the Hardware 3 builds are going to follow the Hardware 4 builds. And I will tell you right now, they are not upgrading these cars until they solve unsupervised. You're not going to get an update to Hardware 4 anytime soon. You're not going to get it by June. You're not going to get it in 2025, in my mind, unless they actually say we have solved unsupervised and start to deliver that product. And now they say, okay, we will upgrade to Hardware 4. Because Hardware 4 has not been proven yet. I think they think it has internally that this is going to be our first unsupervised version. But if Austin goes horribly for some reason, and maybe these critical disengagement type incidents like I talked about on the Cybertruck this morning with the glare and critical takeover with camera visibility, if something like that becomes like a showstopper, they're not going to upgrade everybody to Hardware 3 and then realize they got to do it again, right? So I think if you own a Hardware 3 car, you're going to have to be patient. But I also think that they're probably going to have to pivot a little bit on how to incentivize people that have Hardware 3 to upgrade. And in my mind, at a very minimum, they ought to say everyone with FSD that was purchased outright in a Hardware 3 car, you know, can get Hardware FSD included on any new vehicle they purchase in a transfer. That should be an unlimited transfer, you know, not with a date that you have to buy your car by this day. No, if you have a Hardware 3 car, you can transfer that FSD to new vehicles at any point without any charge. And you're basically going to save $8,000 or whatever the current FSD price would be on a new vehicle. I think that's an immediate and simple and very low cost change they can make. They're going to get a significant portion of those folks that are out there. Maybe not a significant, but a portion. So I think that the, and I keep my route going here. We got that. We're okay for a second. Pay attention to the road, Chuck. The next thing I think they could do for the Hardware 3 folks is also clearly communicate better the expected updates and the limitations of the software that they have. Because many of you may not want to play this game of waiting, expecting something sooner than you're going to get it. The waiting game and expecting a hardware upgrade in 2025, I think may frustrate many people into pivoting to maybe even do another vehicle. Maybe you want a Rivian now. I don't know. Maybe you want to upgrade to a new Hardware 4 car. Maybe the new Juniper has been impressing you and you want to do that. I think that's another option. So, I don't know. The Hardware 3 question is really kind of a difficult one to answer because it's an expensive one to fix, a really expensive one to fix. And I think that's what Elon meant when he said painful. I don't think he, because I don't even think they've designed the computer yet that can be used in an upgrade, right? I don't even think they've done that yet. So I'm going to end trip there. I'm going to try this and see where this return takes me. I'd love it to keep me, take a left here. I'm going to click that road. Yes. Okay, good. I got it in time. This is my 5-point old time intersection that I used to do that are all stop signs that because people are coming over this bridge confuses the car. It's a really bad visibility situation, but I haven't tested that in a while because it just never could do it. It didn't creep right. It'll probably creep right now on the Model Y. Okay. So that's how I feel. I'm really excited about the Austin launch because I think it'll give us a new path to solving FSD because we're going to be actually solving FSD instead of just working on customer impressive drives and things like that. The Hardware 3 question was answered, and now I'm going to move on to the accident that happened last night. So those of you that maybe don't live in the United States or hadn't heard the news, for the first time since 2009, just a few weeks short of the 16-year anniversary of the last accident in the United States, we had a mid-air collision with a regional jet, a Canadair regional jet, I believe it was a 700, collided with an Apache Army helicopter at 8:48 at night as it was approaching, I believe, the shortest runway, runway 33, into the DCA, the Dallas, the Washington, D.C. Reagan Airport, right there on the Potomac River. It was at about 300 feet, and there were a couple security camera footages that show it looks like the regional jet was on a standard sort of instrument approach procedure coming down at a 3-degree glide slope, and this Apache helicopter was going horizontally without any significant altitude change and collided with the regional jet. And to this point, they are calling it a recovery effort and no passengers or crew were expected to survive. I think they're at have found about half of the bodies at this point, and they're continuing to look. The Potomac River was 32 degrees, not quite frozen. The river was high, and it happened at night, and it was cold. Very reminiscent of the Air Florida accident into the Potomac, except for it wasn't an icing problem. This was just a mid-air collision. I will tell you that this sort of thing is possible when air traffic controllers call visual traffic to both the aircraft and any other helicopter traffic that they see close to each other. I'm just going to assume that there was not a failure on the ATC part, that they didn't see these two aircraft were coming close together. But maybe there was a failure in that. And I think that at that point, if we make the assumption that air traffic control saw the aircraft and gave them the warnings, hey, Mr. Helicopter, do you see Mr. Aircraft? Hey, Mr. Aircraft, do you see Mr. Helicopter? If they both say yes, air traffic control is sort of relieved of responsibility and can tell them to fly visually. If they're both on instrument approaches, it's actually the ATC's responsibility to keep them separated. I'm going to end that trip, but I'm just going to let it meander. Let's see where it meanders. So that's what we know, which is completely, factual to this point, that there was an accident, and with the accident, I'm just looking at my neighbor there, and with the accident, everyone was lost. There are some questions I have about the helicopter's trajectory, and the fact, and in the video, you can see the helicopter flying very straight and level for multiple seconds, to me is a little confusing, because it was right in front of them. If their eyes were called onto the traffic, then they should have very clearly had a plain sight of view. Now, as a pilot, I will tell you, sometimes when they say, hey, do you see traffic at 10 o'clock? Or, and there are three aircraft there, you think you see the right one, but you're actually focusing your eyes on the wrong one. That is definitely a possibility. Another question is, could these Army crew members been wearing night vision goggles? And I don't know if many of you have ever worn night vision goggles, but you can see a whole lot at night, but your field of view can be kind of restricted, and you kind of got to turn your head to get the right visibility of what you're looking at, right? So in this situation, if they called their eyes onto traffic and they looked and they said that was the traffic I'm looking at, and they're focusing on that, yet the actual traffic is over here out of your field of view, that is one way I can see how a helicopter could have flown directly into an aircraft that was coming down straight. And I am just making an assumption here that the helicopter flew into the aircraft and the aircraft was just on its normal descent, because the aircraft wasn't just flying around like the helicopter was. It was actually on a procedure into a runway that was probably very steady on its rate of descent and even its heading. So, and the other thing is the air crew should have been looking at the flashing red lights that it would have been on the helicopter to make sure that they don't impact them. And all of modern aircraft have transponders that are for, avoiding accidents. Now, in some very dense airports, like in San Francisco, in LA, in Burbank, and possibly even in Reagan in this scenario, there is a situation where pilots will turn their transponders down to what's called traffic alert only, TA only. That means I'm going to tell you where the traffic is, but I'm never going to tell you to climb, or descend. It doesn't give corrections. And the reason is, in these high density airports, a lot of times that those avoidance maneuvers will go off constantly when you actually have to navigate through those areas. So there's probably a chance that the actual aircraft, the Kennedale Regional Jet, was in TA only in that situation and may have been alerted of traffic around them, which there may have been multiple, but it was not giving them avoidance advisories. Just another speculation, but I know that happens a lot. And that's how you manage high density traffic areas, is by using TA only. It's kind of fun having the Model Y just meander around the neighborhood. It's kind of interesting, and no destination. It's just picking routes, but it's not jumping out onto the main road, which is kind of nice. So first and foremost, let the investigation follow its course. I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm just letting everybody know, being a pilot, how could that happen? And I'm just saying, this isn't something that air traffic control was probably talking to the entire time, going, do you see them? Okay, take left, clear right. There's going to be tapes that show it. There's probably some human factors involved, right? Theoretically, in a radar-controlled environment, even if you give visibility over to the crews after they called, they had the aircraft in sight, there still should be alerts on the radar that say, whoa, they're still getting too close. There still should have been some call-outs telling them, hey, turn left, turn right, climb, go around. There's a lot of things that could have happened from radar control that could have avoided it had there been someone actively watching those two aircraft together. And in high traffic environments, they may not have been able to watch them that closely. Maybe they were worried about somebody on departure or arrival or something similar to that. So, yeah, I think that's all I'm going to say about that because it's so fresh and so new. Once again, my heart goes out to the family and friends of those that were lost. This is a sad day in aviation history where we have another major incident to deal with and to think through. And every one of these accidents has an outcome that makes us safer. That's for sure. There will be lessons learned and we will get better because of this. That's for sure. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. I appreciate you guys sitting with me today. Listen to this podcast and this video. If you're watching the video format, talking about the FSD implications on the earnings release and also this mishap that happened today. Let me know what you would think in the comments below. I appreciate y'all listening. This format is new for me in the audio only. If you're watching the video, appreciate you coming back. Well, have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you soon.